how to sell more cars.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the How to Sell More podcast. How to Sell More Cars podcast. I got a special guest today. This is my buddy, Steve Stawning. Steve Stawning is he's the author of The Ridiculously Simple Car Selling. He's got a whole series of books that he's written about ridiculous selling and sales management and how to ridiculous customer experience. We're going to get Steve to talk about those in a little bit. My all-time favorite of his, Shit Sandwich. Steve is my all-time favorite podcast guest, because when I had him on my original Get You Some radio show several years ago, he sent me a couple of dozen of these, and I've been sending them out ever since. But today we're talking about his new book, Ridiculously Simple Car Selling. It's how to quickly become the laziest, most successful automotive salesperson in the world, because there's no hyperbole there, in the world, but lazy and successful. We're going to start right there, Steve. What does that even mean, and how's it going to happen?
Yeah, you know, I enjoy a little bit of humor every now and then, and a little hyperbole as well. But the key is that people think when they see a 30 car seller, you know, if I'm an 8 car guy or 9 car gal, and I see a 30 car seller, I rationalize in my head, well, I don't want to work that hard, right? I don't want to work those many hours. The fact is that you can sell 30 a month without spending one extra minute at the dealership. You don't have to work 14 hours a day, 6 days a week to sell 30 cars a month. The key is how you spend that time at the dealership. And we didn't really hit on this concept in the book so much, but it comes down to one very simple concept that can change your life for everything. And that is delayed gratification versus instant gratification. So the 30 car sellers believe in delayed gratification, meaning they do some things now that are going to pay dividends down the road. And long term, they're happier. And then there's the instant gratification, checking your Facebook all day long, hanging out in the vaping circle, right? Those things feel good for the moment. But then at the end of the month, when you look up at the board and you've got 7 or 8 out, you know, and you look at your paycheck and you wonder how you're going to make rent, that instant gratification costs you and you ultimately feel worse. And so that's sort of the concept of how you can be both the laziest and most successful. Is that we're not spending any extra time. We're just using our time wisely. And that's really what the book's about.
It's a great concept. The easiest way I've heard it said is to work while you're working. If we put all that time that they're already using, if we make it productive, I guarantee you can get more done. One of my favorite stories in the book, you talked about the instant gratification of banging away on Instagram or hitting, standing around the vape circle. But you actually talked in the book about guys losing deals because they got over the hump of where maybe it was taking too long and they needed that next cigarette and they're not paying attention to their personal health. And that's getting in the way of them being the best they can be.
Yeah, indeed. And all of it comes down to these little choices that you make. You know, we talk in the book, you're not flipping burgers, right? If you were flipping burgers at Wendy's, you're going to make the same amount of money for your shift, whether you flip 1,000 burgers or 100 burgers, right? It doesn't matter. But if that's what you want to do, if you just want to put in the hours, go work at Wendy's, go work at McDonald's. They're paying $16 an hour in our market. But if I'm going to be at the dealership for 8 or 10 hours, why don't I do 8 or 10 hours worth of work, right? The day goes by quicker. I make more money. I'm happier. My personal life gets better. I buy more cool things, right? I have a better future.
It's that hourly wage mentality. It's that I'm going to be here and not being able to get past that. This is my job. And I'm not making an investment in predictive, but we've all seen salespeople just lose it over a customer that they thought was wasting their time, someone they prejudged.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not going to put in the time because it's not going to give them that instant kick.
And it got worse through the pandemic and people haven't gotten out of order taker mode yet. The car market was driven by availability for years. Today, it's driven by control. The salesperson that can grab and maintain control of their prospect, whether that's starting over the phone or starting as a fresh up on the lot, is going to flat out sell more cars. But we've got all these folks out there who don't want to waste their time with a tire kicker. And so the easiest way to make sure you don't have a tire kicker is I'll vomit all the information on them. And if they balk, great. I didn't waste my time with them. And so, you know, anybody who's sold cars for more than a month has sold someone who started. Maybe the first words out of their mouth were, I got to be under 300 a month or I'm not buying. If you follow a road to the sale and stay in control, that person leaves 2 hours later at $500 a month, extremely happy. And what happened was, is that we stuck to our processes in that respect, right? We didn't tell them, oh, $300 a month, let me take you over to the bargain basement, right? We'll go take a look at those vehicles. Oh, you can't afford anything over here. And too many people forgot about that. We had 2019, we had a lot of order takers, sure. We had a lot of automotive sales professionals who understood it takes a process to sell cars. And then inventory shortages started and it became about availability. If I had the car, I'd sell it, right? And I didn't need to waste my time with people because the next guy that I took up, he was going to buy it anyway. Now the breaking out of it's a tough part. That's why we fed this book, sort of. It's the second book we released in 2023 in the Ridiculously Simple series. Our next book was going to be Ridiculously Simple Leadership. And this one was going to come out late next year. And we thought, no, you know what? It's important that we get this out now because everywhere I turned, dealers were asking me, how do I break my salespeople out of order taker mode?
I liked the point of the book. You talked about the maintaining control. And kind of pointed out in the book subtly that a lot of the word vomit that you talked about and this self-judging of people, prejudging of people, we prejudge people. A lot of that is so that we can kind of fudge the numbers so that we can make ourselves look better and take control and not put quite as much energy into it and look like we're really not look like Five Car Freddy when we actually are.
Yeah, we did some math in the book. We showed how, you know, with the same number of ups, how some people can sell 8 and how somebody else can sell 24. And it all has to do with just one belief that, one, everybody's a qualified buyer who wants to buy today, right? When you have that belief, which was the cornerstone of Assumptive Selling, a book no one needs to buy, it's too long, right? And too expensive. But and I wrote it, just so you know, I'm not downplaying somebody else's book. But this concept of everyone's a qualified buyer who wants to buy today. And then two, If I believe the first thing, then I'm going to stay in control and moving through my process. By doing that, I get more people in the CRM, you know, fresh ups, and I get more people in the CRM who are phone ups. And so, and I work my internet leads a little bit differently, right? With this belief that I have a buyer. Five Car Freddy has just the opposite belief, right? And that is everybody's a stinking tire kicker until they prove me differently, right? Until they prove me wrong. And that's a, you know, that's that attitude part that we talk about in the attitude chapter, attitude and activity.
Yeah. Hey, Clinton, how you doing, buddy?
What's going on, Terry? How are you?
Good, brother. Hey, Steve, you ruined my setup there because I was going to talk to you about selling. And you're my favorite podcast guest ever because you sent me so many of these books, but you didn't send me that dang $50 Assumptive Selling book. And
I'll send you, Kyle. You know what? I'll make a note. I'll send you some copies. You know, author copies on Amazon are dirt cheap. So I have no problem sending you some copies of that.
No, because I was going to say, when I was reading the book, you didn't send me it. And then you're in the book telling, it's the only book I've ever read where the author is telling people, please don't go buy my book. It's ridiculously overpriced. Do not buy that book. So my next question is, why pay $16 for the new book when Assumptive Selling costs 3 times as much?
Yeah, well, you know, the problem with Assumptive Selling is it has the lessons in it are ridiculously simple because I'm a simple guy. I don't know how to make things complicated. I wish I did. I'd make more money. But the problem is it's just too darn long. You know, it's over 400 pages. And I'll tell you, every time I was at a 20 group and I was handing out copies to the dealers in the 20 group when I first released it, the first thing out of anybody's mouth is, do you have an audio version? Because nobody wants to read a 400 page book. And so this one's about 130 something pages, 140 pages. And it really is kind of the Cliff Notes version of Assumptive Selling. And the other part, the other reason salespeople don't want to buy Assumptive Selling is there are parts in there for managers. There are parts in there for BDCs that are BDC specific. Ridiculously Simple Car Selling is 100% for the automotive sales professional. It's not written for BDCs. It's not written for managers. It's just written for people who want to sell more cars without spending one more minute at the dealership.
Yeah, and that's what I like. Not spending one more minute at the dealership. No reason to work bell to bell. No reason to worry about making a living if you don't leave yourself time to live a life. So that's what wanted me to jump in the book. The book is great. 140 pages, like you said, 20 chapters, ridiculously simple, ridiculously short chapters. But they're in there. You got chapters about overcoming objections, chapters about social media. You didn't have a chapter, and I wondered if it was on purpose, There's no chapter about closing the sale.
Yeah, a couple of reasons. One, the process for closing is so different in every store, right? There are still stores where the close, I've got stores that do a box close today, still today, very successful. And the fact is that they don't, you know, the salespeople have zero to do with closing the deal at that point. Then I have stores that are still old fashioned and that the manager comes out, or they have a floor manager, or they have a team lead that does the closing. The other piece is that if you follow the road to the sale properly, it's just like we talked about in the negotiations chapter or the overcoming objections chapter, you know, you don't have to get involved in negotiations. I say that, you know, here are the ways to avoid being stuck in negotiations. But if you're stuck in them, here are a couple of neat tips. But if salespeople are finding they're having to overcome lots of objections, if salespeople are finding that they're having to learn 52 different closing techniques, and if salespeople are feel like they have to go buy Chris Voss's book, Never Split the Difference, so that they can learn how to negotiate because they're always caught in negotiations, well, they're not doing it right. They're not following assumptive selling. Everyone's a qualified buyer who wants to buy today. And they're not taking control and using their road to the sale. They're jumping, they're skipping steps, they're letting customers take them and pull them down a stinking rabbit hole. That's how you get caught up in objections. That's how you get caught up in negotiations. And that's how you get all the way through the process. And all of a sudden, I've got a close in the write-up. And the fact is that it's just not as necessary today. But you're right. I did leave it out on purpose because I could teach a few closes in there. And then anytime I've done closing training classes, I get bombarded with, yeah, but what if? Yeah, but what about the guy? What about, yeah. Okay. You know, it never ends.
As so, is most sorry. Things in life, the problem ain't the problem. It's how you're dealing with the perfect. Problem.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just said it in four words, and I said it in 8,700 words.
That's why I can't make a living as a writer. I say everything too quickly. So I got to write longer books. You had some great stories, and I assumed that was a softball. I kind of lobbed that to you because I knew you didn't put the closing in there for exactly that reason, because you spent so much time talking about maintaining the relationship and building the relationship. You talk about social selling, but most people, when you talk about social selling, people, a lot of them, their eyes roll back in their head, and they think you're talking about social media and TikTok and Instagram and Facebook or whatever. But it starts even before that. My favorite story from the book was the bartender who had been selling cars for 6 months. Tell us about that guy.
Yeah, so I don't want to give away even the city or state that he lives in, because I don't want to embarrass him. I assume he's still selling today. They were a client pre-pandemic, and then their county got shut down for a really long time, so we parted ways. But yeah, he'd been selling cars for 6 months, and it was at a dealership that had a very senior sales staff in a relatively small town, in a big state, but a relatively small town. And, you know, he's trying to catch fresh ups. And everybody who comes in already knows somebody at the dealership. And so he was losing these deals. He was getting split deals if the guy wasn't there. And I said, well, you know, we're talking about, you know, his background. I said, you know, what's your background? He had background in music, background as a bartender. And I said, oh, that's pretty cool. And he said, yeah, actually, I don't make enough here, so I'm still bartending. I said, is it a popular place? He said, oh, yeah, real popular. I said, is it popular with locals? He said, oh, yeah, it's loaded with locals. I said, how many have you sold? He said, none. I said, why? He said, well, I haven't told him I'm selling cars. I just thought, oh, my gosh. I mean, who do we trust, right? I mean, some people trust their doctor, but everybody trusts their bartender, don't they?
Right. You're going to pour your heart out, baby.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I was just, it was absolutely shocked. When we talk about social networking, how about networking, right? Right. And if we're going to network, how about we start with the people that we know, the people who are closest to us? We've all run into salespeople who a month into the job haven't told their friends and family they're selling cars. I mean, like, what are you doing, right? I mean, everybody wants a friend in the car business. And to let people know that that's what you do and that you're going to help them. And make no mistake, his dealership was selling. They had a Ford rooftop and a CDJR rooftop that you could sell out of. But he could get any make and model. I mean, that's what people need to understand, right? Maybe not you know, zero mileage Chevy Silverado. But if the guy wanted a Silverado, we could find him one. We find one at auction. We could find one in a dealer trade. There's all sorts of things that can happen. And to just assume that, you know, people are going to come to you through osmosis or something is it's so wrong. It's so minimalist, not minimalist thinking, because that would be good. It's not thinking. You know what I mean?
I've had this conversation with salespeople. Why on earth, why doesn't every human being in your life know that you sell cars? Because the one thing I know that they have in common is every human being in your life is going to buy a car somewhere, someday, somehow. Yep. So it's always confused me. And the answers I get are, A, they're going to want a deal. They're not going to let me make any money. Or B, they're more trouble than they're worth. If there's a problem. If there's more problem, I'm deep in it at Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah, well, one, you're always going to make money in your friends and family. Yeah. I've never paid more for a car than when I worked at the Asbury Automotive Group, and one of our Honda stores had a deal for me, you know, and I just let it go. I just let it run, right? And then 2 days later, I'm doing the math going, wait a minute, this is not the right lease. You know, I think they messed with the rates and residuals on me. But anyway, and then two, you know, the I'm going to be hearing about it. Well, wait a minute. You know, we have the chapter in Ridiculously Simple Car Selling called SPOC, Single Point of Contact. This is the second step that lots of folks don't understand about selling cars. They want repeat referral business, but they won't become the single point of contact for their buyers. I want my relatives at Thanksgiving dinner to talk to me about the problems that they're having with their cars, because I want to help them with those issues, because I want them coming to me the next time they want a car and anything that they need. I saw you do a post on this actually on LinkedIn about it, just right before, right after we released the book, about just, and maybe it was somebody who commented on one of your posts, but the idea is, if I sell a vehicle to somebody, I want them, and if they need anything, if they need floor mats, if they want to schedule an oil change, I want them to call me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to transfer them to service. I'm going to say, hey, when did you want to bring it in? Look, I'll go get it scheduled. I'll give you a call back to confirm, right? Because who's that guy going to call when he wants to buy a vehicle? You, because you've done something for him in between the last sale and the next sale.
I had a salesperson complaining to me one time that he was doing a lot of stuff on, maybe not complaining, but he was, you know, just hemming and hawing a little bit. He'd done a lot of stuff on social media, and people were calling him, but he was getting all these random calls about, how do I set the transmission levels, or how do I adjust the lights? All, you know, questions not from customers, but from, you know, general people in Cincinnati or wherever who saw his video, and then now they want to ask him questions. So he said, I'm spending a lot of time following up on that. I said, you just completed the trifecta, because you have replaced Google in their life. You are more powerful than Google. Instead of Google,
it's a gold mine.
If you're in the conversation, you got a shot.
Yeah. If they're willing to ask you those questions, they're gonna ask you questions when, hey, I need a new truck. What kind of truck should I buy? Right. What's the difference between, you know, I don't live in an area with a lot of snow, but I'm thinking about getting a four-wheel drive. Does it make sense? You know, those kind of questions. You know, that's part of it though too. When you open yourself up on social media, this is one of the reasons why I want people to focus on Facebook first. Facebook is local, right? I mean, that you're the bulk of your reach is going to be local. When you do YouTube, hey, if you want to create a brand for yourself and do YouTube, if that's your long-term goal and it's not necessarily to sell cars, YouTube all day long, TikTok all day long, you make more money on YouTube. But the fact is that those the reach of those when you go viral is international. The reach on Facebook when you go viral is your friends and their friends, and then maybe their friends. And since most of those people live or work in your market, you can have the greatest impact on the sales side of the business.
You know, I'm glad you say that. I love seeing that in the book that when you're talking about Facebook, because when I say social media, it's just a shorthand for Facebook. Facebook is the 800-pound gorilla, and I have to explain that to people. But the thing is that all of the others, the ones that you mentioned, you can go viral and have millions of followers and be overseas, and they're great about building this maybe image. But Facebook and a little bit maybe LinkedIn are great about building a connection. They're great about building this interpersonal engagement of people that you can communicate with back and forth. Most of everything on Instagram is all one way, and maybe you get a heart or something on it.
Yeah, no, you're right. And Facebook, again, has the ability to go viral locally. LinkedIn, to your point, that is terrific for careers, right? So if I'm a salesperson today, I'm going to be on LinkedIn and I'm going to be active on LinkedIn. I may not sell many cars or any at all on LinkedIn, but as I grow in my career, I become a sales manager. You know, things change. I get laid off, I get fired, whatever. I decide I want to leave this. If I already have this big LinkedIn network, man, and I've put the open to work circle around me, I'll have a sales manager job or GSM job, you know, within a week, tops.
I've seen it happen, you know, yep. from one C to the other, because of yep. their LinkedIn presence and social media presence. Yep.
Agreed.
So my favorite thing about the book, you were telling people, don't buy my other book, it costs too much. And I always tell people, if they buy a book of mine, don't buy this book expecting it to change your life. This is just a book, dude. Seriously. These are just words. The only thing that's going to make anything happen is you making something happen. And so at the end of every chapter, you're telling people how to make something happen. Here's what you got to do, because, you know, setting those goals is a wish list. And you talk about building to-do list on each one of your chapters. So we're about to wrap this up in just a few minutes. So I'm going to give you one last thing before we come back and we talk about the rest of your books. But one last thing on ridiculously simple car selling. Give us the one action step, one thing that a salesperson can, listening to this tonight, can jump into the dealership tomorrow and do to be the laziest, most successful automotive salesperson in the world.
Okay, I'm going to give them two. One is, I've already given the one, which is everyone's a buyer who wants to buy today. Everyone's a buyer who wants to buy today. No offense. People don't like visiting car dealerships. They don't like calling car dealerships. No offense. If they're calling us, they're not taking a poll, right? They're not trying to make sure we vote for their person. They want to buy a car. The second thing is money makers. And that is, create a list of things that you called a to-do list a minute ago. Create a list of things that if you do them, it'll make you more money. Put it on a piece of paper, put it in your pocket. And every time you are not in front of an up, pull out your moneymaker list and do one of them. And they find my blog, askthemanager.com, look up moneymaker list. I have lists all over the place on that. But the idea is this, I'm here 8 or 10 hours a day, and I'm here 8 or 10 hours, whether I do work or not. Why don't I fill it with moneymakers instead of time wasters? And that will change everything about them. I mean, it truly will, because they'll be happier, the day will go quicker, and they'll make more money.
There you go. It's easy peasy lemon squeezy, brother. Let's talk about your other books. You got Ridiculously Simple Car Selling, but then you have several other ridiculous books and ridiculously expensive books. But these are the ones that tie in with that. But they're not all about the car business, are they?
No. In fact, Ridiculously Simple Customer Experience, which also came out this year, that is really for any business that has customers. And if you can see, it's the same sort of 130 to 140 pages. Each chapter ends with key learnings and chapter exercises. But I would recommend that if for car dealers that they buy this for their leadership team, especially for their service team, their service advisors, anybody who answers the phone at the dealership. And then the first one in the Ridiculously Simple series is Ridiculously Simple Sales Management. And while it's not written for the automotive industry specifically, of course, I have lots of automotive examples in there, and every chapter in there applies to automotive. But it's really about getting more out of your team and getting rid of this concept that we have in sales management in the auto industry, which is, you know, more is more. Man, if the CRM is only asking for two calls to BBACs, let's make the CRM ask for 10 calls over 10 days, because more is better. Yeah. No, more is just more. It's, yeah. You know, less is better sometimes, right? Money, you know, make sure every call is a money call, that kind of thing. So really, it talks about keeping the team motivated, helping them sell one today, all of those pieces that we need to be doing in the car business.
You talk about the lazy salespeople. I've always referred to myself as pragmatic. I don't mind a little hard work, but not for the sake of work. That ain't why I'm here. Working hard ain't my reason for getting up in, you know, the late morning. So yep. You got a question, brother?
Yeah, I'm very interested in the books. Are they on Amazon?
They are, but they are. You don't, I don't want to cost Steve any money. You go buy the other two, but I've got my copy of Ridiculously Simple Car Selling. I'm going to send to you for popping in. I always send out the books. That's what, and I'll send you a copy of Shit Sandwich too. So you're getting both of Steve's books. I'll drop those in the mail to you. Then you go buy his other two off Amazon and spread those around.
Absolutely, and I'm very interested.
Excellent, Clinton. And look, hey, I would be remiss if I didn't say, please give me a 5-star Amazon review.
Of course.
Absolutely. Steve, the last word is yours, my brother.
Wow, I didn't know I was going to get a last word. Look, I really appreciate your time, Terry. I really do. And all that you do in the industry and all that you do for car dealers, both on what you do as a business and what you do as just a human being. And I can't thank you enough for what you do for me. So I appreciate your time today.
I appreciate you being in my life, brother.
That goes double for me, Terry.
All right. Thanks, Clinton. Thanks, guys. Everyone, thanks for tuning in and go sell something. We'll see you next time.